mindfulness movement and the cultivating emotional balance we've done and the popularity of being in the present moment and things like that are things that we just take for granted now as being part of our culture and something of value. When Elaine began her studies of Buddhism and meditation, it was something that was completely foreign to the United States, and she was really part of that first generation that had the courage and the good fortune to dive in and study with the Tibetans who spoke hardly any English or had their very interesting ways of speaking, but also had just generation after generation of traditional and foundational studies that are probably beyond anything we can imagine with how they immerse themselves. So it's really because specifically of people, Elaine and other people like her, that we have the gifts of meditation and mindfulness and so on that we get to enjoy in our lives. So why am I saying all this? Because I was thinking that having Elaine here is really like having a national treasure. It's really true. And it's very rare to have someone of this generation of people who really got immersed in the traditional studies. And yet also, she's a mother, was a businesswoman, she ran and helped found Vajrapani Institute, a meditation center, and she lived through this transition that brought all of us the gifts of Buddhism, and she would not only live through it, she is one of the people that has done that for us all. So I want to again say thank you for coming and sharing your lived wisdom with us. Because you've got all this book learning and all this street learning and all this big-hearted, open wisdom and love for us all and connection with the deep truths of the Buddha's way. So thank you and welcome.
Thank you very much. That was open.
We know who you really are.
Right, some of you know me better than others. Well, I'm always happy to come here. It's a delight, and it's a delight to see how this center is evolving as well, and growing, and offering so many different possibilities for connecting with wisdom teachings, not just through Buddha Dharma, but through the courses like Cultivating Emotional Balance, which Ami led recently with Brandy, and was Eve part of that as well? No. Anyway, I'm really happy to be here to share a little bit of what I have studied for many years. Oh, good idea. It's much better for me to know what time it is, isn't it? So now, Lauren, if I want to go to the next slide, I'm going to push.
You're going to have to push connect first on the back set. It's a teeny tiny button.
Oh, yeah.
And you're connected, and then you push buttons until it moves. It's
any button?
No, I think, I don't know which way is which from this.
The right.
The right or the left.
There you go. Okay. So usually in these teachings, when I'm teaching any Tibetan Buddhist Dharma, we begin with saying a few prayers. It's like when you go to someone's home for dinner, you take a gift, something nice to share, some dessert, some beverage. Well, what we do is, because Buddha Dharma saves our life, you know, it's like the highest thing we can possibly get, then we offer everything in the universe as a gift. And I actually have, you have them here, but also I actually have the prayers on here as well. So this is called a mandala offering. And there's a mudra that we do, which you can simply just hold your hands, or you can simply just think. In order to receive teachings, in order to listen to the Buddha Dharma, I offer everything in the universe. But the mudra itself is like this. You cross your little fingers, and you grab them with your thumbs. And that causes your, which finger is it? Your ring finger to stick up. And then you cross your middle finger and grab them with your index fingers. This creates what is called Mount Meru and the four continents. They used to think of this as the center of the universe. So that's the mudra. But oftentimes people will simply hold their hands. It's really, offering a mandala is really from your heart. It's not from your mouth or from your mudra, but it's really from your heart to think, okay, I'm going to receive something precious. I'm going to give everything I have or everything I love. So we'll chant this. I think we'll just chant it in English. Nope. But it doesn't move on my screen. Isn't that interesting? Okay.
The English is just down low.
Say again?
The English is down low.
Yes, I see, but my slide isn't moving. I have to do two things. All right. We'll chant it in English. Oh, this ground scented with perfume and covered with flowers, adorned by Mount Meru, for land, sun, and moon, I imagine as a this is going to be interesting when you stay on top of it, eh? So the thing that sets us apart from any other spiritual tradition is our refuge. And when we take refuge in, we usually recite the refuge prayer three times. We're taking refuge in outer refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, so the historical Buddha, the teachings, the Dharma, his teachings on the path to enlightenment, and the Sangha, our spiritual community, our companions on this path. The second time that we recite the prayer, we think, actually, I'm really taking refuge in the mind of enlightenment. I'm taking refuge in seeing how reality exists. And I'm taking refuge in the Arya beings who have seen reality, how it exists, sometimes called seeing emptiness directly. And thirdly, and this is the most important one, this is taking refuge with confidence in the knowledge that the nature of your very own mind is wisdom. Its expression is clarity, and its compassion is all-pervasive. So at the center of our own being, we have this Buddha nature, this Buddha potential. So when we take refuge, if we think of these three levels of refuge, it's really beautiful. Geshe Lama Khunchok used to say, don't take refuge from your mouth. Take refuge from your heart. So by understanding how precious it is. So we'll chant once in Tibetan and twice in English. Sangye chodang sopi chognam la janchu bardu dagni kyab sukshi dagi jin so gi pe sonam ki drola penchir sangye drupashu. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. By my virtuous actions of giving and so on, may I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. I go for refuge until enlightenment to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. by my virtuous actions of giving and so on. May I become a Buddha to benefit all beings. So then we make this prayer. May all beings have equanimity, free of attachment and aversion. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings find good rebirths and the bliss of liberation. And then this next one is requesting blessings, which is actually the entire path to enlightenment. So we're requesting the blessings to attain the realizations of this entire path to enlightenment. So we request, may we be inspired by guru devotion, uplifted by the preciousness of this human life, shed the fetters of attachment and aversion through a knowledge of impermanence, be protected by refuge, guided by a knowledge of actions and their results, aim for liberation through renunciation. May we be motivated by bodhicitta, opened by giving, disciplined by ethical behavior, strengthened by patience, enthused by joyous effort, and stabilized by concentration, and freed by wisdom. Uh-huh. Okay, that's interesting. Okay, so as we delve into these teachings, it's a good idea for us to just settle our minds. I'd like to do a little meditation to start with, yeah? We have busy lives, busy days. Go, 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 go. Sometimes hard to be present. So if you take your meditation posture, ensuring that your back is straight. And bring your awareness into the room. And then into this body. Letting go of the past. Not fantasizing about the future. But just being present. In this body. Allow yourself to experience a sense of gratitude for making the effort to come this evening. For there are many things that you could have done. So I invite you to bring your awareness now to the crown of your head. Inside the body, allowing it to float down behind the eyes, releasing and relaxing all tension. As it floats down, like mist in a valley, to the jaw, the back of your neck, let the muscles succumb to gravity, float across your shoulders, down your arms, all the way to the tips of your fingers. Then float down your torso, past your shoulder blades. Down to the small of your back, all the way to your sit bones. Let your belly be soft to receive the full breath. Float down your legs, past your knees, to the soles of your feet and the tips of your toes. Your whole body relaxed. Feel the places where your body touches the cushion, the seat, the floor, your arms against your body. Feel a sense of stability, grounded. Safe, well held in the arms of Mother Earth. Now I invite you to allow your awareness to rise back up through the center of your body, slowly coming all the way up to the crown of your head. Notice how the spine straightens a bit and the mind lightens and brightens as you connect with the Father energy, the energy of the heavens, a vast, limitless potential. And feel a sense of abundance, thinking, yes, I have enough. I'm content. Now imagine that the energy of the mother rises up toward the heart, and the father energy descends also toward the heart. And the two come together right there at your heart center, taking the aspect of a small sphere of warm light, whose nature is love. And know that you are loved. Allow this light to grow through the power of your imagination. It begins to fill your body with loving energy, and it becomes uncontainable, and it begins to pass through all of your pores in all 10 directions until it fills the room and continuing to expand out, it fills the world and beyond. Allow your loving awareness to expand to fill the infinitude of space. And then, like breath on a mirror, it begins to contract back. And as it does so, everything is dissolving into the nature of pure bliss and awareness. Until it becomes a minute sphere of light. Be that and watch it completely dissolve. As it gets smaller and smaller, becoming imperceivable. And you rest in a state of pure, luminous, sweet awareness. Letting go of whatever arises. Just resting in each present moment. Ask yourself, what could ever rest on any fraction of the sky? Nor could any object rest upon your clear light mind. Release yourself into this pristine awareness. Your bonds will all be broken, and without a doubt, you will be free. These are the words of the great Master Tilopa. When thoughts, feelings, and emotions capture you, simply expand your mind out again, letting them go, and then coming right back to natural awareness. And be kind to yourself. like training a puppy, to sit and stay. There's nothing to do. And nothing to undo. Meditate in the marketplace. Sometimes our conditions are not total silence, right? So, we've actually gone over this material that I'm going to review tonight. We went over it the last time I was here. So this is going to be a review to catch us up to where we were. And then next week we'll add on, okay? So we're just going to kind of go through, and you're welcome to join in. We'll go until 7:30, and then we'll take a break. Have a tea. Enjoy. The three pots. What's the significance of the three pots?
Type of student
we want to be, yes. So how about the upside down pot? Don't want to be that? What's the significance of an upside down pot?
Nothing can go
in it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And how about the full pot?
It's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it's actually, the full pot is sometimes called the dirty pot, because you're already full of ideas. You've got your attitude and your ideas, and you're pretty sure. So it's the opposite of being open-minded and curious with a sense of wonderment. You know, I always like to think, what could it be? So, also, it could also have to do with your motivation. You know, perhaps your motivation is, why are you here? You know, think about, why did I come? Might be, in the old days, it used to be because everybody else was going, right? It was the thing you did. But to have an idea that I want to be here because I really do want to learn. I want to be free. That's ideal. And I want to free everybody else. That's the very best. And then there's the cracked pot. The cracked pot is probably what most of us are. It goes in, but it leaks out. It's really hard. Used to be that they didn't have recording devices, right? No recording devices, no note-taking, no computers to... So really, they had to listen well. The Lama would traditionally repeat things 3 times. The student was asked to respond, right? So that was how you learn. Welcome, just come, please. So how is it that we can actually hold in our mind what we hear? How do you do it? How do you remember? What works? Or are you just a cracked pot? Anybody have a technique? Yes, Belinda.
Rehearsing it.
Rehearsing it. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Practice.
Practice. Yeah.
And I'm visual, so if I just hear something, it's just
yes.
Like that.
Yeah, that's hence the three pots. You know, to look at it. I look at it now, and then I think, oh yeah, I remember. Yeah, those are the kinds of students I don't want to be. Right? Those.
And discussing it with my Dharma friends.
That's very good. That's great. That's really good too. Having discussions. Yeah. That's excellent. So this particular set of teachings comes from Master Atisha in the 11th century, and it's called the Lamp of the Path. Lamp for the path, lamp on the path. It's also called the path to liberation, steps on the path. And what it is stages. It's actually clean, clear, point by point by point. If you follow like this, you'll get there. Do any of you know Adyashanti? You've heard his name. He says the path to liberation is a call to action. It's something you do. It is a doing that will undo you absolutely. If you do not do the teaching, if you don't study and apply it fearlessly, it can't affect any transformation. The path of liberation is not a belief system. It's something to be put into practice. And in this sense, it's entirely practical. I really like that. It's the doing that will undo you completely. I think that's excellent. So Buddhism is the study of the mind. Lama Yeshe used to say it's the psychology of the mind, and that we should all become our own psychologist. So to understand how it is that our mind works. So the definition actually of mind is luminous and knowing, or merely clear and aware, mere clarity and awareness. It is the way in which we know ourselves, phenomena, experience. Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche has said that it is mind and mind alone that binds us or sets us free. So it is only the mind. It's all in the mind, you know. When people used to say that, it's all in your mind. I used to react quite strongly to that. It's all in your mind. No, it's really you. It's the way you're behaving that is the cause. So the Buddha was the supreme cognitive therapist, really. The behavioral therapist. If you behave like this, this will be the result. So interesting to think about that, and to think that in fact we can be our own psychotherapist. Sometimes people think that there is an evolution happening, that over time we are evolving into these liberated beings. But Alan Wallace said, there isn't anything in the scripture that says if you don't do anything, you will have just get closer and closer to enlightenment. That's not what Buddha said. He said you have to practice. You have to apply effort, conscious, skillful effort. And if we don't practice, then we just continue to spin in this cycle of birth, aging, sickness, and death. Those are called the four powerful rivers. Swept by the four powerful rivers. And that's samsara, cycling without choice through birth, aging, sickness, and death. But the good news is, we don't have to do that. We can be free from that. Can be free from that. And that's what practice is all about, to be free from that. So how do we do it? We find someone who has traveled the road, and we get on the bus. So we find a teacher who has more knowledge than we have, who's been there, who thinks more about others than themselves, and who thinks more about the future lives, and then this life. So school. Sometimes the Buddha's teachings are likened to the different grades of school. And initially, we start with grade school, right? And the motivation here is, I recognize the possibility of unfortunate rebirths, and I don't want that. So I want a positive future life. We think, I really want to work. At least I want a positive future life. And the two practices are to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, and to live an ethical life. And we contemplate, the meditations that we contemplate are this precious human life that we have and how we're going to lose it. So if we think about it, what we have, it motivates us to practice. Those are the two of the four thoughts that turn the mind to practice, is thinking that we have such a precious opportunity and that it's not going to last. And it's such a bore. But it's also such a golden opportunity. If we recognize it, and extract its essence, it's an amazing opportunity. Totally mind-boggling. But we have to actually contemplate it to believe it. You know, just to hear it, say, oh yeah, I got this precious human life, doesn't really do much until you think about it. What does it mean to have it? We're actually going to do a meditation on this precious human life. So in this initial scope, this in the beginning, you know, this idea to have an understanding of how precious the life is and that we are going to lose it, it makes us want to practice in every moment. Because the meditation also on impermanence really leads us to that conclusion. When we really marinate our mind in these various topics, they're not just topics for intellectual understanding. They're topics that are meant to get into your mind and transform it. So that you think, no, I'm not going to engage in that useless activity because it's wasting my precious human life. I just can't do that. I'm not going to engage in, I'm going to see if I can remember what it is. Regrettable emotional, what is it? Wait. Episodes. I got a teaching on cultivating emotional balance from Ami today. The terminology is not negative actions, it's regrettable emotional episodes. I like that. So I'm going to try to hold it. I told her I'll be able to remember it because my father's name, his initials were R-E-E. So I said I'll remember it with R, regrettable, E, emotional, E, episodes. So that's how I remember that. That's a lesson in how to remember, how to memorize, is to have acronyms. It's something that I learned a long time ago. And for me, it really works. Sometimes, I'm not sure. Anyway. So, we live an ethical life. And you know, I took the time to create this so that you couldn't read the whole thing at one time. I could click it and give you one at a time. But when we're doing it in this way, it doesn't work that way. So now you have the whole thing up. Don't look! You're jumping ahead. You know, usually these are, they're taught in the negative as opposed to the positive. They say, avoid the 10 non-virtuous actions.
Thou shalt not.
Yes, exactly. Thou shalt not. That's right. And it's nice to actually look at them in the positive way, to think, you know, let's protect life, protect property. So not stealing, meaning I have respect for the fact that this is your property. You know, I don't take what's not freely given. And not engaging in sexual misconduct is certainly respecting relationships. It's taking care. And it's really down to the nitty-gritty. It goes all the way down to not flirting with your friend's boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, it's not just, it's protecting relationships. It's thinking about non-harming, really. And speech, speaking truthfully, respectfully, kindly, and meaningfully. And rather than the three of mind, well-wishing instead of ill-will, rejoicing instead of covetousness, and being open-minded to truth instead of having views that are counterproductive to your enlightenment. In the teachings on karma, which we'll get into next Tuesday, one of the things that I find is helpful to remember, that when I behave in ways that are non-productive, I'm planting the seed to experience that same result. Now, if I lie, I'm planting the seed to be lied to, and also for my own words to lose their power. You know how, I'm sure all of you know people who seem to be telling the truth, but nobody believes them? Do you know people like that? They don't lie, but their words have absolutely no power. I know somebody in particular who's very bright, and he has good ideas, but nobody will listen to him. And it's so weird. So I said to him, I said, you know, it's got to be, you know, you used to lie a lot, past lives. I don't know. It's interesting. Your words lose their power when you speak in ways that are not helpful. So it's good to memorize those, to know what they mean, and to understand why, to study those, to understand why it is that that's not helpful. Why it is that engaging in unethical behavior is not helpful. Tell me what you think is the reason. Why does it not help you on the path to enlightenment to engage in unethical behavior? Yes.
Because in the moment it seems like the cause of you getting the thing you want is maybe the misdeed, but it's a misunderstanding of true cause and how you really get things in your life.
And so what happens in the mind when you, let's say, when you lie, what happens in your own mind?
You see yourself lying.
You don't trust people.
Very good, yes. You see yourself lying. You don't trust people. Isn't it true that people who are really worried about being stolen from, you know, lock your car and lock your house and be careful and don't watch for your purse and be careful, that there's some kind of different attitude. It's very interesting to watch how your mind begins to look. If you might take something from someone else, then you're going to be worried that somebody's going to take it from you. But if you, let's say, you always tell the truth, then you believe people, right? It's a much nicer mindset to feel at ease, at peace. And also, if you're telling the truth, you don't have to worry about who you told what. You don't have to cover your tracks, right? So, it's good to actually look deeply into what happens to your mind when you step off the path. Because really, these behaviors are behaviors that take you away from peace of mind. So any negative action or regrettable emotional episode, doesn't even have to be emotional, right? Anyway, I'm playing with those words because I'm trying to inculcate them in my mind. Anytime we engage in activity that's not helpful, that is harming, creates an unease in our own mind. And it grows, which we'll learn later. Let's see. The making a determination in your life that you set your intention, I'm going to avoid these, you know, I'm going to engage in positive actions. You know, that's like your steering wheel that keeps you on the road, you know, out of the ruts, is your intention. So you make the intention. And that's one of the things that happens when you take vows. You take refuge vows, you take lay vows, you take bodhisattva vows. You're making a commitment to behave in a certain way. And that is a really strong, it's a really good steering wheel, because you remember, oh, I promised that I would do that. It's not just, oh, it's not good if I do that. It's, no, I promised I would not do that. So when we have certain behaviors, we all have habits, propensities to behave in non-virtuous ways. And a non-virtue is simply an action that causes suffering in the moment and in the future. So we all have some of us tendencies in one of these various categories. And if we recognize our biggest one and we say, okay, I see that I have a tendency to exaggerate. That exaggeration is lying. So if I see I exaggerate, even kidding, you know, we say kidding on the square. You know, it means I might be kidding, but I do mean it. So these are all behaviors that are unhelpful in the long run. So when you find one, you label it, you work on them individually, you work on it, and you say, okay, I do that, and I'm going to listen for that in my speech pattern. And I'm going to try as much as possible to transform that, to stop doing that, to do something other than that, to catch myself by recognizing that it's like shooting yourself in the foot. You know, you're creating the cause for your own future suffering. So remembering that. It's really excellent to watch that, to see what it means, to study each individual one, what they mean. And we'll look more into that in the future. So this is huge. To live an ethical life is huge. So to do that is super practice. You don't have to go to a cave to be on the path. Just doing your best to live an ethical life is perfect. Okay. Now I wondered if this was actually going to come out. It comes out fairly good. The Dharma talks about the six realms. These are the six possibilities for what happens when you leave this life. And there are causes for all of these realms. And this is according to numbers, which means if you see the precious human lives, there are fewer, those are demigods or asuras. These are gods, and they have huge, lovely lives, but they're totally jealous of the gods. So their minds are consumed with jealousy, trying to get what the gods have. It's kind of, they have the same sort of ability to see one another as we have with the animal realm. We can see the animal realm. They can see the gods, and the gods can see them. So they're often warring with the gods, and they never win. So that's the suffering life. The god realm, those, their minds are totally self-absorbed, but they have absolutely, they just think about what they want, and it appears. You know, they're beautiful. Their lives are full of joy and bliss and music and dance, and they're very happy. The only problem that they have is that they're going to lose it. They're still in samsara, and they're still going to die. So that's a lot of suffering for the god realms. The people in the god realms, they never age. And they live for 500 years, and they never age until the last 7 days of their life. And then they begin to get old and to smell, and their flower garlands begin to wilt, and their clothing is not nice anymore. And what happens is they used to have a whole cadre of friends, and now everybody's backing away. Nobody wants to be around him. It's unbelievable suffering for them at the time of death. And because of that, no opportunity to practice at the time of death. No opportunity to be free of this cycle, using death as a path. We all know the animal realm. You can see the human realm. And even within the human realm, the precious human life within the human realm, very small. They say, if you take your fingernail and you grab sand, as much sand as you can get under your fingernail, and believe me, I can't get very much under mine. My fingernails break off. So that many grains of sand compared to all the grains of sand in the universe, that's how many precious human lives are within the human realm. So to have a precious human life is unbelievably rare. Really. Also, there's another analogy. You know the analogy of the turtle? You remember the analogy of the turtle? Who can tell the analogy of the turtle? Yes?
Oh, if you have a world that's an entire ocean, the storm is continually going on, and then there's a single yolk that's floating out in this vast ocean, and there's a turtle that will only come up once every 100 years to take a breath, that the chances of having a precious rebirth are the same odds as that turtle coming up to take a breath and putting its head right through the yolk in that vast ocean.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Well, and according to, and then the Preta realm, okay? So the Preta realm, these are hungry ghosts. And we are going to go through these realms a little bit more, but the Preta realm, their minds are completely consumed with a poverty mentality. You know, they never have enough food. They're in really so much suffering. We will go over that. And then the hell realms, there are many different hell realms, but that in the hell realm, I tell you, when I was putting together these pictures for this, you'll see them. I'm not going to show them all tonight. I just this pyramid tonight. But I started thinking about how it is that in the human realm, within the human realm, we can see hell realms. we can see Prater realms within the human realm. You know, people who have live in abject poverty, people who live with tremendous suffering. So anyway, we'll go talk about that some more. So this precious human life that we have, which is so very, very rare, is characterized by being free of being born in any of those other realms, right? So the reason to go over these things, the reason to look at it, because heaven knows nobody really wants to look deeply at it. I remember the very first time I heard about the hell realms. It was from Lama Zopa Rinpoche back in 1977. I was at a month-long meditation course, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche would come in the morning, and Lama Yeshe would come in the afternoon. And Lama Zopa Rinpoche spent, I believe, 2 weeks talking about the hell realms. And I just thought, because the descriptions of them are really horrific. They are so horrific that you can't even bear to read them. And then Lama Yeshe would come in the afternoon, and he would talk about loving kindness and compassion, bodhicitta. So for me, it was like good cop, bad cop. You know, Rinpoche was getting you to, you know, wake up and practice, and Lama was saying, okay, and here's how, you know, just practice loving kindness and wisdom and compassion. So it is painful to look at. And it is powerful to motivate you to say, yeah, okay, it might be true. When I was in Europe at a director's meeting, I was in France, and I went to this church in a small village in France. And I walked in, and I could not believe this. The whole back wall behind, it was a Catholic church, and I don't know what the names of various parts of the church are, but in the very back, the whole wall was covered with something that looked like Dante's Inferno. It actually looked like the six realms. I couldn't believe it. So I looked and I said, yeah, depicting the hells. Yes, depicting the ghosts, the hungry ghosts. The animals. You saw humans who were in various forms of suffering or bliss. You saw gods. I was so taken by that because I said, okay, this is not a Buddhist church, but that's for sure the six realms. And depicted in much the same way as Buddhists have depicted it. I don't know the story of Dante's Inferno. Do you know? Do you know the story of that book? I mean, he supposedly went to hell, right?
Yeah, down
you know?
Through the different layers.
Down through the layers.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's we don't want to go there, right? We want to avoid it at all costs. And with that lovely idea, let's take a break. Have a cup of tea. And we'll come back. Please, take a break. I'll ding the bell.